Okay, very good day to all our listeners and viewers. Today, I have KF Chan.
Yes.
And KF, of course, we have been friends for a long time and since the coffee days. I mean, we're still friends in the coffee business, right?
Yeah, I suddenly lose track of how long was that already. I think 10 years.
More than 10 years.
12 years.
I'm already in KL for more than 13 years. I think since before I moved here, we already have contact.
Yes.
But of course, KF is a very interesting guy, you know, well-versed in, you know, we talk about other things also, politics. And of course, recently, we've been talking about crypto and specifically Bitcoin. And Kev, maybe I start off with this background and then we can kind of go into the discussion. I think it was around June last year. Even before that, remember, we kind of talk about, you know, do we want to invest into the mining business?
Yeah, correct.
And I mean, we even took out some money and eventually it was just too costly, right?
Yeah. And there's some timing issues here.
And that was before pandemic even, right? I can't remember.
The pandemic started.
Okay. Yeah. And then we just kind of, and there was a time you get into research and study all these things. Now, why we invite KF here today? Because personally, I mean, we heard about crypto, we heard about Bitcoin, and always at the beginning, you are thinking, is this for real? Is this a scam, right?
Yes.
But I would say, you know, based on talking to you and, you know, your explanation, it really helped me to begin to read at the whole issue, you know, because the whole thing is you have to research and be convinced of what is happening, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's what we want to talk about today. But going back to last June, and I remember at that time it was $28,000 and today we are reaching all-time high for Malaysian ringgit.
Yes.
So, which is equivalent to about $68, $69.
Yes, around 60 or 69 USD.
So that's any asset two or three times within a year, it's like, where can you get that?
Yeah.
But of course, let's go back to the whole, I'm really interested in the whole thing because you're the first one that I heard, you know, saying that, look, this is something that you have to learn how it functions so that you begin to take responsibility for that. I mean, we don't hear this kind of concept for other quote-unquote trading, because we were just talking about the philosophical difference, right? Can you even call this a trading? Maybe we start from there first, I think. How would you, because a lot of time when we talk about this and people will be like, okay, so is this trading? How much should I be investing? So what would be, you know, if people ask you, where would you start, you know?
Okay. I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've talked to a lot of people how to make it in such a way that it's easier to understand. A lot of people heard of Bitcoin, they always think about it as a cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 20 over 1,000 cryptocurrency, forget about that. Bitcoin is the first one and it is unique in a certain sense. The way to understand Bitcoin is to understand the purpose of it. Why was it created in the first place? If we do not know the purpose of that which is created, then people just look at another store, it's as another cool thing, you know, it may go up, it may go down, nothing special, right?
Yep.
But if you understand the purpose of it, it is quite mind-blowing, mm-hmm. actually. Now, as you mentioned, we talked about this thing first explored about 3 years ago, just after the pandemic started. A lot of free time at that time. even at the time, there was a cycle where Bitcoin price is going up. Everybody is going into it. And for me, it's like, what is everybody going into this for? In fact, I was thinking, are you crazy? No, you don't know what is that.
So did you think that it might be a scam also?
I have not thought about it as a scam because I just do not know what it is.
Okay.
In fact, I heard about it like the term 10 years ago. Mm. And too bad I didn't study about it. Then I heard about it in 2017. Somebody told me about it. And that guy doesn't know how to explain it. Yep. Of course, I also don't know what it is. Until I spent time to learn about it. Then the whole world of understanding changed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I see a lot of things that I've never thought I've seen before. Okay. So let's start from the very basic. What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is actually a digital network that is designed to be a better form of money. So when people say it's a better form of money, they are scratching their head. Why? What are you talking about money? Who cares about money? You're using ringgit, you have USD, you know. I realized that after 50 years of living, I realized that we have not been taught much about money. Nobody mm-hmm. really knows what is actually money. Just for a simple understanding, money basically is a few very important criteria. First thing, it must be a store of value. Now, why do we need money as a store of value that when we work? If you go and catch fish, you catch a lot of fish, you cannot eat. After that, it will spoil.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to sell it to somebody. Let's say I can eat 2 fish. I caught 5. So I eat 2. I want to sell 3. If I don't sell the 3, it will just rot away. So my value is just wasted. But if you can sell it for something,
mm-hmm.
let's say many years ago, I sell it for some beautiful seashells. So this thing, I can keep it as a store of value. I'm keeping it there. So whatever that you use that can use as a store of value is an important form of money. So throughout history, people have been using seashells. If we watch movie, ancient movie, we know that people use copper, people use silver, people use gold. I was watching some Netflix about some Vikings. Right from the beginning, they all recognize gold is very important, right? Because gold is a very powerful store of value. It literally cannot die, right? You can bomb the whole city and everybody die, but the gold don't die. And gold, however you use it in what form, you melt it down, it will be that gold, right? So gold tends to end up being a very strong form of money. Now, of course, if you are in the prison, you don't have gold, what is a better form of money? Then people have cigarette.
Yep.
So cigarette can be form. So money can be any form, as long as it serves its purpose as a store of value primarily. Then you want it to be a medium of exchange, can use it to exchange things. Now, if I catch fish and you grow apples, maybe I don't want apples, you want fish, I want something else, then you don't get a similarity of one, then you cannot exchange during the barter system. So you need another medium that you can use it to exchange. So when we talk about money, store of value and medium of exchange is primarily most important. So when Bitcoin comes out, it is designed to be a better form of money. Now, when we think about better form of money, then we think, what is wrong with the current money that we're using? Why is it not good? We've been using ringgit, we can spend with digital also nowadays. So it's a very good form of money. So when we think about why is certain form of money not so good, we have to think about the current monetary system that we have. Now, then one of the main story we talk about is when I was studying Bitcoin, I realized one thing. I thought our ringgit was backed by gold.
Mm.
Then, to my surprise, Malaysian ringgit was never ever been backed by gold. Then I thought, wait a minute, I must be the dumb one. Why in the world I have this thought in my mind all this while? Then I think back, then I realized, oh, my teacher in secondary school that time taught me that our ringgit is backed by gold. Oh, I said, incredible. It's in the textbook at the time. Then I thought, maybe I'm the stupid one. Let me check. I go and ask a few more people. Apparently, a lot of people also thought that our ringgit is backed by gold. It's incredible.
Yeah, I guess it's like a general knowledge, you know, like people think about, you know, Fort Knox and, you know, those kind of...
Fort Knox supposed to have gold, but actually nobody knows whether inside Fort Knox got gold or not.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's just an assumption. And in fact, right after we discuss about whether ringgit is backed by gold, I mean, you go and Google search, there's no answer one. Nobody confirm, no deny.
Yes, it's a very difficult thing because like every country also say they have gold. In fact, people know that countries are buying gold. Yes, they buy gold. But when we say that it's backed by something, right, we must get a proper understanding of what does it mean to be backed by something. Many, many thousand years ago, when people are using gold also at the time, they're also very smart. They also somebody also create a bank. You know? What is basically a bank? In a village or in a city where everybody have gold, then people worry, you put your gold at home, somebody can come to your house and steal it, right? So generally, the smartest guy or the richest guy will say, hey, everybody, I have a place here.
Secure
place. Put all the gold in. I hire the guards. So we protect the gold and assume this guy is a good guy first, right? He's a good guy. So we put all the gold there. But then if you put all the gold there, how do you represent the gold? How much you have? Everybody will give you a certificate. So you put one gold, I give you how much. You put two gold. Everybody got a record. It's a ledger, right? So everybody got a paper. And the paper is recognized because the bank has been... have integrity, they didn't cheat yet, right? So everybody have that, so they can use the paper money to exchange with each other. And that is why it's backed by gold. You can use the same paper money and redeem back the gold. So the back buy in the certain sense is called redeemable.
Yep.
So many years ago, when US become very strong, so they say, okay, everybody use US dollar as a global reserve. You give me all your gold and buy US dollar and you use US dollar to transact. And they promise you're supposed to be able to redeem it
At some point.
$1 must be able to redeem to a certain number of gold. And then if you go into history, you look in 1971, what happened then is where US got off the gold standard, President Nixon, right? Once you got off the gold standard, actually, basically, they got off the gold standard because I have no gold to give you back.
Yeah.
Right? Something happened. They go into a war. They spend all their gold. There's no gold to give back. It's not redeemable anymore. So then the thing, let's come up with a better scenario. Forget about this gold story. So Suddenly the gold standard is gone. No, nobody follow the gold standard anymore. I mean, they still have, some people still have gold. Some countries still have gold, but you're not backed by. That means your ringgit, your dollar is not actually, there's nothing to do with the gold. You can skip the gold as just your asset. But the money that you use and you print out to be used into the society has nothing to do with how much gold you have. Okay, that is where the first stage of the problem start happening. When government can print money.
Yep.
Now, a lot of people, almost all the adults I talk to, right, they know that government print money, but they do not know the consequence. What happened when government prints money?
Yep.
And when there's nothing behind it, right? It's like, if I have 10,000 ringgit in the bank 12 years ago, so I have 10,000 ringgit. Is the 10,000 ringgit worth 10,000 ringgit? Because the 10,000 ringgit is what I have over the entire supply of all the ringgit in Malaysia. Okay, this is a simple form of saying it. Right? It's called the M2 money supply. Yep. So we actually check, you know, and interestingly, right, this is not a secret. You can check the record in the Bank Negara website, but it's very hard to find, right? So you have to dig. So 12 years ago, the total money supply, the M2 money supply, they call it, is about 1.2 trillion. You can imagine, 1.2 trillion is so big, we don't know how big it is. 12 years ago. Now imagine I have 10,000 and they have 1.2 trillion. 12 years after that, if I never spend my 10,000 ringgit in the bank, the bottom part currently is 2.4 trillion. Over just 12 years, the supply doubled.
Yep.
Now, anybody, if you do simple math, right? If you have 1 over 2, you get 0.5. That's your value, right? If your top never changed, the bottom had been increased to 4. Now you have 1 over 4. Your value have just decreased. So basically, whenever people say that the money is losing value, because you talk about inflation means price go up. Now, essentially, when we say inflation and price go up, it's not really the price of that. It's not really that goods itself, right, become more valuable. It just means that your ringgit or your currency
has
lose its value. I remember when we were still talking about that when we first started the cafe, right? One cup of coffee is 10 ringgit.
Yep.
Now, after like about 5 years, 6 years, it's 12 ringgit. Did the coffee get better? No, the coffee didn't get better. It's the same cup of coffee. But if you take your 10 ringgit back, you cannot buy one cup of coffee. You buy only 70%. So now you need to top up more in order to buy. So that's why price keep going up.
Yep.
Whenever a country or government can print money as they wish without you knowing, your value of your currency will forever be falling.
Yeah, Kev, I remember this is one of the things that really kind of blew my mind, you know, when we had this discussion. And when you go and do the research, it's not even a big secret, you know. And
it's
in fact,
a big secret. Yes.
Recently, there was one article which I think I show you. Just 4th of March, so it's called The Ringgit Will Continue Falling. Here's why. And he actually put, this author, this in FMT, he actually put a statistic here talking about from 1970 to currently, you know, how much the supply of ringgit increased. Okay, there's a number there which will kind of shock us. Okay. Okay, let me just check. Okay. 1970 to 2023, the supply is from 4.1 billion ringgit
around
to 2.4 trillion.
How many times was that?
580 times.
So that's a scary thing.
And that's really the main reason for inflation. It's not even like supply and demand issue, like what the media and the government wants us to believe, right? Oh, things are getting more expensive, lack of petroleum. But would you agree that money printing is the single biggest issue?
Yes, it's the single biggest issue. Now, sometimes we don't know what to compare it, but it's not the only issue.
Of course.
There are many things can cause the price to go up. You know, like during the pandemic, there's one ship blocked the whole canal, no supply come out, then your price will go up. And then 2 years back in Brazil, there's a big climate problem, some frost thing. Now, a lot of coffee get killed. The Brazil coffee bean price just go up. Yes, in the short term, all this happened. But in the long term, if you talk about in the 70s especially, it's incredible. When I was young, in secondary school, I thought I wanted to be a policeman. Watch too much movie, right?
Hong Kong movie.
I was calculate. Salary of a policeman is 600 ringgit. How to survive? And I was remembering, I calculate, you know, wait a minute, my chicken rice only 2 ringgit.
Mm-hmm.
If I eat 3 meals a day, 6 ringgit, then I eat some drinks, whatever, okay, 10 ringgit. Hey, I can survive. But then, after another 30 years, the chicken rice didn't get better. But now chicken rice no more 2 ringgit. No, I think it's 10 ringgit, or many places is selling 10 ringgit. No. So if you look at this, the price only go in one direction.
Mm.
The price keep going up because the value keep going down. And if you look at the same research,
yep.
From 400 billion to 2.4 trillion, how can the value of your money be the same? You have been wiped off already, is it?
580 yes. times to be exact. And so it comes back to the whole issue again, which we talked about early on, because you were mentioning that to understand Bitcoin specifically, we have to understand the reason why it was designed.
The problem it's trying to solve, right? Actually, when it comes to this, it's talking about the money supply. So essentially, it's the money supply that has been increased.
Mm.
Somebody increased the money supply. So you have to think, who is the person who increased the money supply? Now, in a country, of course, the government is the one who increased the money supply. But that when they increase the money supply, they didn't give the money to you. Or they can pretend to give you a bit, right? They give you 100 ringgit, but they can print trillion.
Yeah.
So yes, I got some, but then they print so much. So your value dropped increasingly by a lot. Mm. So the supply is very crucial. Anything where the supply can increase and increase arbitrarily, increase without your control, the value always go down. I got a friend who bought a condo in Cyberjaya 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I said, wow, 10 years ago, you must be making money now if you sell. He said, no, I sell now, lose money. I say, how in the world you lose money? The condo not nice, man? The condo very nice. But now when I bought, it was one condo building. Now I've got 5 condo building.
Mm.
So the supply increase, your value go down.
Yep.
Okay. Bitcoin, what it is? Bitcoin is basically a digital network that's designed to be better for money. First, it is neutral. That means there's no individuals that can control it. It is decentralized all over the world where nobody can actually stop it. Nobody can hold a gun to it. And Bitcoin also is designed to have a cap of supply.
Yep.
So people always hear the phrase, there's 21 million Bitcoin.
Mm.
It will not be 21 million. There will be not more than 21 million. There's a cap there.
There's an absolute max.
There's
limit.
Absolute max. You just cannot increase it. Now, I have some IT background. Now, incredibly, even though Bitcoin is a digital invention, a lot of people in the IT world cannot grasp it also. I also cannot grasp it in the beginning. Say, how can something, you say the supply cannot increase? Because remember when we have MP3, when we have video files,
you can just
we
duplicate
can copy them unlimited times, you know? Yep. So to say something is digital and cannot be copied and cannot be increased doesn't make sense. But incredibly, after I study it, and it will come up to a point that you realize that it is true. The supply cannot be increased.
Yeah, I remember you show us, and it's just it's the way it is designed, because
the
intent was really to kind of be a better system.
So it
wants to bust the money printing.
Yes, because you have a supply cap, because nobody can control it, and you can never print it for free. So you have a supply that's here, and then you have a demand that keep going up. As opposed to every other currency, let's say ringgit or USD. You have your supply, your own savings here, but the supply keep going up. And where is the limit? Mm. Where's the ceiling?
Yep.
Actually, there's no ceiling.
Correct. Now, one of the things, of course, we are even doing this episode because I think Bitcoin in relation to ringgit is at all-time high, right? We mentioned at the beginning. And so one of the things that people always talk about is that they kind of view this as investment, you know, like this is just a commodity. And that's why we go through the technical introduction of, you know, like the purpose of it. But what would you say to people, you know, if they want to get involved, you know? I mean, obviously, it can be a form of money, but we are still very, very far away from that. But in terms of short to medium term, you know, should people approach this as investment or it's not a good approach? I mean, what would you say?
Okay, I know a lot of people, even including myself, when we first approach it, we always look at it as a form of investment.
Mm-hmm.
Because anything, when you see the price keep going up, you thought, hey, it's a good thing to invest in. You know, You buy low, you sell high. That's investment.
And you mentioned your 1,000 right? becomes 6,000.
Yes, 1,000 becomes 6,000.
It's kind of exciting
great,
to see that.
Yes. But whenever you see something like this, you must always know that it's, in the short term, it must go up and down. So we have to understand a bit about the investment aspect. Mm. Investment is, okay, one also important thing. Investment is talking about risk, right? There's a risk involved.
Yep.
So if you are those who like to take risk, well, a lot of things we can invest in. People can also look at Bitcoin investment in the sense that Bitcoin has been for 15 years. And if you look at the 15-year cycle, the trend,
yep.
it is always in the uptrend. In the short term of 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, you have up and down, up and down, up and down. But the trend is always like that. Up and down, up and down. The trend is going up. So for the past 15 years, that is the trend. Go up. Now, does it go down? Now, people always tell you when it comes to investment, past performance doesn't guarantee future result. Yep. Yes, we all know that. So you look at that. Is it a good form of investment? At least for the past 15 years, the trajectory is going up. But then I always ask myself, what about the ringgit?
Mm.
If I would ask you to project what is the future of the ringgit, not in the short term, 5 years, 10 years time, you project the ringgit. Go up or go down? Incredibly, in this one, right, if you point to one direction, your success rate is 100% accurate. You know for sure where the direction is going because 30 years ago, when I calculate my nasi ayam at 2 ringgit,
yep.
now it's already 8 ringgit or 10 ringgit. It's been going up for the past 40 years and never reversed course, is it? So there are certain directions that we can see in the long term, up or down.
Mm.
In Bitcoin, over the past 15 years, the trend trends up. But when you look at this thing, everybody tells you, it's true. When you look at investment, you cannot guarantee. So you can, if you look at it, investment, then you have to calculate your own risk based on that.
Mm.
Personally, to me, I look at Bitcoin as a form of better money.
Okay.
It's the strongest money. It is a money that no third party can increase it, can print for free. Now, because Bitcoin is a form of money, if you think about money itself, right, you do not invest in money. We want to earn money. So let's say I earn money, I have a collection of money. I want to do investment. I actually take the money and buy a building or buy a business, and this building or business provide value, and other people like the value, and they give me more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is how the money grow. I do not take my money and go and invest in money itself. That doesn't make sense. That only makes sense in a fiat environment where people can print money. Mm. You just imagine many years ago, if people have gold, I have gold, you have gold. Am I going to tell you, I'm going to buy your gold with my gold?
Yeah, it's like an equal exchange already.
Yeah, it's equal exchange. Why do you do that? But I use the gold, I buy a business. You like to stay in my hotel, so you give me more gold.
Yeah, my business have value.
Exactly. So when it comes to money, you must always understand, and this applies to everybody. Mm. Everybody experience will tell you the same thing. You can only get money if you exchange value. I give a value of something to somebody. Somebody recognize that value and give me money. Right? Everybody is going through the same experience. So therefore, if you look at Bitcoin as a form of money, you do not invest in Bitcoin, you save in Bitcoin. And then you use the Bitcoin as a form of money, invest in business, invest in skills, invest in whatever, and then provide value and people give you more money or more Bitcoin. So that is my approach to it.
Okay.
Yes, there are some people who look at it as investment, but a better way, a safe way is to look at it as a form of money that you can use it for saving. It is essentially a saving technology. The current system doesn't give us a good saving technology because if you put your money in the bank, if you put 10,000 ringgit in the bank in 1970, now
it's about 500 it's times less.
It was 500 ringgit or less, is it? So our system tells you that safe money is bad. So you need to invest. Now that is where the problem is. You know? Saving money is bad because you will lose money if you save it. So the system is designed to, in order not to lose money, you must invest. Essentially, you don't want to lose money, you must take risk.
Mm.
That doesn't sound very good, right?
Yep.
And then if you take risk, what if you lose your money? Because it's a risk.
Yep.
Is the government give you back? No, the government don't give you back. You lose your money, too bad, right? What if you win? You invest and you gain money. Then the government say, now I'm going to tax you, right? So it doesn't make sense. So what we have here, Bitcoin, is a technology to allow you to save money without taking risk. Why is it that we need the society, right, be forced upon to take risk? That is the issue. Now, throughout in history, if you look at our grandfather, our fathers, right, they always tell us to save money because you work,
yep.
you get your value, you save it. Saving is good. But now we realize that anybody who saves money itself is going to lose money over the long term.
Yep. Now, of course, some people say the system itself is risky. I mean, but of course, we have 15 years and, you know, based on your observation and the trend, of course, recently, Bitcoin has been accepted as, you know, ETF, you know, it's like a tradable fund. Yeah. So, I mean, what would be your outlook? Obviously you have great confidence. I also have great confidence, but what would you say to people who are like, maybe the whole system can collapse?
Okay. Well, maybe in that case, before you go to ETF, we're going to look at how people keep Bitcoin.
Mm.
Bitcoin is designed that any individual can keep it for themselves safely, mm-hmm. securely. Bitcoin is protected by a secret key that can be translated into 12 English words. So you have this secret key. If nobody knows a secret key, your Bitcoin cannot be stolen.
Yep.
It cannot be hacked. The only way anybody can take it is to know the secret.
Yep.
Now, so this is not something difficult. A lot of people think it's very difficult to do. No, it's not difficult. If you can raise a child, you can use a handphone, you can drive a car, you can learn this. It's not that difficult.
Yep.
But if you consider all these things you cannot do, then, well, there's nothing much to be done.
And that's one of the things we talk about. The word that I heard from you previously, self-custody. And that's one of the things, right? You know, we put money in the bank, we don't really want to think about it. And sometimes you even have banker and come and say, oh, you know, this is Maybank, this is public bank, it won't go bust. But you think about it, it's such an arrogant statement because banks have gone down before.
Yes,
and,
yes.
and of course, when of course you talk about self-custody, you do need to learn to secure your password. You do need to be careful. You know, there are certain things you have to take personal responsibility.
Absolutely true. You need to take personal responsibility. The idea about Bitcoin is to take personal responsibility. The only thing different I would say is it is not difficult to take personal responsibility if you want to. It's not difficult. It is not like a few thousand years ago when you have gold. You can take personal responsibility if it's your gold. You can store it at home. But you cannot stop a thief from coming in, a robber coming in, put a gun to your head and ask you for it. Mm. Right? So Bitcoin, you can save it securely. If you have gold, you have no choice. You need to put it in the bank because otherwise you get robbed. You see? That's a problem. With Bitcoin, if you don't have the key, nobody can rob you. Now, the thing is this. People always think that bank is very safe.
Mm.
How safe? It's only safe until 250,000.
Yeah,
right? You got the insurance, but if you're going to put 500,000 in the bank, right? If the bank is so confident, no problem. Cannot die one. Then whatever, put in 100% guarantee. Why do they only limit it to 250,000, right? So inherently, there are some risks already.
Yep.
Right, but generally in a stable country like ours, well, we don't foresee anything bad happen. But then, all the country before they fall, before trouble happens, everybody is so very comfortable.
Yeah,
but
people forget.
Remember Malaysia, we have some banks failed before.
We have, I mean, NBF, people forgot stuff, right? Like Lehman Brothers and
even US big,
yeah,
very big banks.
These are like top 10 banks. I mean, recently, you remember even
recently, yes,
the Swiss bank also can close down.
Yes,
so it's like. Yeah. So the Bitcoin itself is safe, but what about the, people say one day, nobody wants Bitcoin, like the value goes down. Do you foresee this could happen at all?
Okay. In theory, of course, everything when it comes to value is nobody wants it. Of course, there's no more value. Therefore, the question we need to ask is why people do not want it anymore.
Mm.
So then you say, what is so good about Bitcoin? You just imagine you have a digital system that cannot be destroyed.
Yep.
In theory, the only way to destroy it, right, you need the worldwide catastrophe, apocalyptic, nuclear worldwide war.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is dead, so Bitcoin died. Right?
Yep.
But then everything else also died. But other than that, you have a system that's so decentralized, nobody sit here can think of a way how to kill it.
Mm.
You have a system where you can store the value that cannot be hacked, cannot be stolen, cannot be robbed without your cooperation. You have a system that can transmit across from here to US in 10 minutes.
Yep.
Now, that kind of system, when you think about it, why is it of no value?
Mm.
It is something of great value because even just an invention itself is of something of great value. Of course, everything that when nobody wants it anymore, of course, it goes down to zero, which is true. So, but in theory, the question you want to ask is, why would it lose value?
And when we talk about the whole comparison with the fiat system, it's like a no-brainer, right? Fiat system, every 10 years, you lose like 50% of your value. And the practicality of, you know, like one of the things, of course, is let's say there's war here and suddenly you need to escape, I don't know, to Indonesia or Brazil.
There goes your ringgit, right?
Yeah. I mean, even if you have 10 kilo gold, you can't really transport them.
Nobody can transport their gold when you're in a war trying to get out, right? You'll be robbed. You'll be dead by then, you see. And in fact, even talking about a national currency, a lot of currency have failed. Of course, in Malaysia, we feel very comfortable. I can tell you, we feel very comfortable. Nobody thinks it's really at risk. But I remember when we were younger at the time, we look at Venezuela, we got Miss Venezuela. It's a great country.
Yeah.
And look at now what happened to Venezuela. Their money already dropped until like nobody wants it anymore. And in that sense, it's true. If that thing nobody wants, there's no more value. So the question is, why is that thing nobody wants anymore? Imagine, in fact, even not it to be that long, even our grandfather's time, you know, during the Japanese invaded Malaysia, we have this banana money.
Correct.
Where they print at will. So when you have something that is so common, people can print without cost, right? It will lose value. Why do you want it in the first place after that?
Yep.
When you have a lot of it, nobody wants it. In Venezuela, I see one documentary, they found a whole bunch of cash in a gunny sack, in a rubbish bin. And then, in not so long ago, 2 years back in Sri Lanka, people are using their money, right, to make handicraft. You know, you don't use it to buy things anymore. Useless, man. Do flowers, do aeroplane, you know, your money, you know, brand new one, you know. So, you can die, even currency. You know.
Now, interestingly, we were just discussing just how, like, nations that are experiencing hyperinflation are the ones that start to adopt crypto and specifically Bitcoin as the mode of tender. And I think it kind of just justifies its existence as an inflation buster.
In fact, currently the first country that actually adopted Bitcoin as legal tender is El Salvador.
El Salvador, yeah.
Now, El Salvador, the situation is, in a sense, it's easier for them because their own currency already dead. Nobody wants it anymore. Even the El Salvadorian don't want it anymore. It's zero. Yep. You know? So they already dollarized. So they only have dollar as a legal tender. So their president come out, they say, dollar is still legal tender. Bitcoin is also legal tender.
Okay, so right. So they adopt USD also, right?
They have no choice, right? I mean, actually before Bitcoin, right, if your own currency died, there's no other currency better than US dollar. US dollar is the best fiat currency now that is going down. It is just that they go down
the best of the worst, they call it.
Yes, it's the best of the worst. So if you don't have anything, you want US dollar.
And even recently, remember the new Argentina president, Javier Milei, and he was like, he wanted to kind of phase out Argentina peso and just become USD because there's no value already. And so there is some kind of practical usage, I guess, you know, when the money really cannot be used, and this is where the potential of the system comes in.
I do have some people tells me that, you know, Bitcoin growth is a bit too slow. Well, actually, you can't help it. It's always Bitcoin is something because it overcomes the problem of fiat, right? You need to be in an environment where that problem is very big. Then Bitcoin become very relevant.
Yep.
Now, in a very comfortable environment, if you are in US, you are in Singapore, you're in Malaysia, even Malaysia, we are among the worst among the region.
Still not bad
and
enough.
Yet it's not that bad enough. You are not Argentina, you're not Venezuela, right? So it will take time, but that is the point, is that everybody think their currency is of use until it is no use anymore. And what can cause the currency to just go down? You and me have no influence at all over how money is printed. Every time money is printed, you lose value, I lose value. But when somebody decides to print money, they don't ask us for permission, they don't ask us for anything, they just do it, you see. So you can have it in, okay, Argentina is very interesting. A lot of people are watching him and see how is he doing.
How is he going
to
do it?
Because he got a chance to do something different. But interestingly, if you see, right, during his campaign, he already tell the people in Argentina, elect me, there will be pain. So this kind of a campaign is very unusual. You know, you don't see in Malaysia, right? In Malaysia, it's what? Elect me, tomorrow everybody is well, right? Okay, yeah. So we want to say that there's a big meme going on, right? Hari ini kita jadi kerajaan, esok minyak turun. Where got so easy? It's very hard, right? So, but nobody can campaign that way. Elect me tomorrow, pain. Nobody is going to do it. Mm. So everybody is, elect me tomorrow, all your life is better.
Yeah.
That is where you continue on with the fiat issue. You just continue on. There's no end to it.
No, no. Okay, let's end this recording with some, talk about some game theory and, like, for example, we have seen like Argentina, El Salvador, they started to use this because they have no choice. But in days to come, when the fiat system really go out of control, how do you, because now the majority of ownership of Bitcoin, private ownership, obviously. And I think, it's a percentage already, 93%?
93% is already issued. That means almost all the Bitcoin is already been issued.
And in private ownership.
Out of 21 million, 19 over million already issued out. So the other 13 million is going to, the other remaining, right, 7% is going to be issued over the next 100 years. So it's going to be very slow going.
So assuming a government, wants to adopt this, and obviously they have to use certain resources to buy, right? From private owner. Is that how it works?
Yes, that's how it works. The only way you can get it is somebody else give it to you or sell it to you or exchange it with you.
So for you, is you believe in the potential and that's why you're putting it, and the day will come where people need it. And also for your own use, obviously.
Well, first of all, it is something where it cannot be debased.
Mm.
The problem is your current fiat currency is going to be debased, and you know it's going to be debased. You have compared to one that cannot be debased. So that's why I look at it as a savings technology. Right? So you save in it.
So
but we don't tell people that, okay, go and put 100% of money in it. Because why tomorrow I fell down, I'm going to go to the hospital, how is it? So you don't put everything in. But if you understand the meaning and the reason behind it, then you can evaluate the risk correctly. And then you can ask yourself, is there a risk?
Yep.
And what is the risk of not doing anything?
Mm.
That will be very relevant.
And it's not that hard also. I mean, if you have the Bitcoin, it's not that hard to convert into ringgit. It can be quite fast. I mean, if you know your way around.
Actually, that is true. I would say that in this world, Bitcoin is the second most liquid asset next to the USD.
Mm.
US dollar probably is the most accepted worldwide.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is the next most accepted. You can almost change it to any currency worldwide.
Yeah.
Ringgit can only be used within this region. You bring your ringgit to Europe, it's useless, right? You bring it to US, it's useless. And many other countries, the currency is the same thing. They only use within their own country or their own region.
Mm.
You get out, it's useless. So based on the fiat currency, US is the most liquid. Bitcoin is the next most liquid. You can bring it anywhere, you will find people willing to accept. Even in China.
Yeah.
A lot of people will be
actually, you can say
take.
Especially in China, actually.
You can say especially in China, because when you have a country that doesn't let you do it, right, that is where you know it's very important.
And in fact, people were saying that at one stage they were the biggest miner, right?
Yes, they banned that part. But
before that, how much they mine?
Of course, that is also not... Actually, we do not know who has it. The good thing about Bitcoin is because it's so decentralized, anybody can participate. You don't need permission from anybody, right? Of course, unless you're in China. But even in China, I talk to people from China, they also know. They only ban the mining part only. If you want to exchange Bitcoin with individual, they don't care. They close one eye.
Correct. Right? And even with exchange and things like that.
Oh, they haven't been able to set up a legitimate exchange.
Not
so
in China.
So they can do peer-to-peer. But Hong Kong can.
I mean, you just use a VPN and there are like thousands of exchange out there.
Yes, there are thousands out there. Yeah.
So Cyprus,
peer
all
to
those.
Peer, they can't stop. So another thing about Bitcoin is because it is a permissionless system. As long as you have internet, you can transact and there's nothing going to stop you.
So Kev, do you have any, there are so many other things we can talk about, but I think we kind of reached our time limit already for this kind of introductory.
Yes.
But do you have any kind of concluding comment that maybe in context of Malaysia, if people want to, now you start to see people have a bit of interest because all-time high is on newspaper and things like that. So, what would you say to someone who is totally not involved at all and now they are interested to explore? What would be some of your advice?
I would say that if you are interested to explore, learn about it first.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the all-time high, it says, yes, the price is going up now, but tomorrow it can go down a little bit. In a long time frame, 4 to 5 years, it doesn't really matter. It will balance back.
Yeah.
Whatever price you go, few years start, as you can hold a few years, your local currency will drop faster than it. So don't have to worry about that. But understanding of it is important. Like I say, it is not difficult. It's just that you need to learn it. If you don't know, get somebody to explain it to you, and it's not difficult. You can learn to use a handphone. You can learn to drive a car. You can learn to use Bitcoin. There will only be problem with people who says that, I don't want to do anything, I want to do it. I want to know it, but I don't want to do anything. Sorry, that cannot be done.
Yep.
The thesis of Bitcoin is something called proof of work. It must have a proof that you have work. Then you will be able to do it. Not difficult.
So Kev, I understand you also do some training on this, right? So, I mean, can we put your contact here? I mean, if people want to contact you for, because I think, I mean, we some of us really benefited from your training just less than 1 year ago, and look at where our understanding is now. So maybe we can put your contact or handle, you know, in a link, and people can kind of contact you also if they want to.
That of course would be great. I mean, I'm very happy to give further training to a lot of people. The important part is the training is not about trading. It's not about taking your money and help you take your money and put somewhere.
Yes, yes.
Whenever you hear somebody take your money and buy Bitcoin for you and put somewhere, it's most likely it's a scam, right? So here we want to teach you how to understand it and self-custody
do
it
for yourself.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so put your contact here, and I think, Kev, that's all the time we have for today, but I think we can easily do a couple more episodes to talk about the nitty-gritty of it.
Yes, there's a many segment, many angles to look at it. So we will have more time in future.
All right, so that's all for now. Okay, bye-bye for now.
All right, bye.